Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Community Conversations here on KRFY. I'm Phil Huff, back after a couple weeks of break during the pledge drive, although I think we ran a couple short interviews. Sure was a fun pledge drive. Thanks for hosting live last week, Julie.
Yes. Hi, Phil. It's been fun to be live in the studio from time to time. I'm looking forward to joining you there in the next couple of weeks. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yes.
So today we have some exciting guests.
Yes, we do. And are you, Phil, I just have to know, are you trying to skip what's been going on in your world for the last week? Because we usually talk about that.
Well, no, it seems so time dated by the time we play this to be talking about Memorial Day weekend is like a yesteryear thing, but it was a fun-filled weekend, of course, with all these remembrances of folks from past and getting out for a couple hikes and barbecues and such, but it was a good weekend. Next, you're going to tell me you hauled in a whole bunch of morels, aren't you?
No, I didn't, Phil. I was doing other more boring things, which I'm not even going to get into. I was hoping you had interesting news. So I guess without further ado, we will launch into our interview, and it's a good one. I would like to introduce the Idaho Community Foundation, and we're joined by two folks who work there. The first person is Christy Scott. Christy is the philanthropic advisor of the North. Hello, Christy.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
Yes, appreciate you joining us. And also Kara Nielsen. And Kara, you are Vice President of Philanthropy and Impact. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yes, so lucky that we have you here. I'd like for you to start by telling us a bit about yourselves, your backgrounds, how you came to be working in with the foundation. Christy, why don't you go ahead?
I've been with the Idaho Community Foundation for 3 years now, and my background is actually quite diverse, but through some changes in life and college led me to this awesome role with the Idaho Community Foundation. And my job in North Idaho spans from Bonners Ferry down to Grangeville, and I work with donors who want to establish funds to support nonprofits in North Idaho. And we have many different ways of doing that, many different ways of working with our donors. And I think that's one of the benefits of working with the Community Foundation is the flexibility that we can give. As a Community Foundation, our job is to really mobilize resources and to help Idahoans thrive in local communities. And so throughout the 3 years that I've been here, I've worked with many donors and many fund holders, especially in the Sandpoint area, where we have a very strong supporters and strong following throughout Bonner and Boundary counties. And it's just a joy to always go and visit and learn what the needs are and how we can meet those through our donors' generosity.
Yes, I learned about you from a friend that had found out about you and happened to be planning to do much of their charitable giving through you. So I was excited to hear about you and learn more about your foundation.
Wonderful. Yes. And that's one thing that, you know, is great about ICF. We've, I think we're going on our 34th year now, Kara.
This is our 34th
year of being a community foundation, and not to mention the only statewide community foundation in Idaho. And so it's really, you know, we have a large network of donors, professional advisors, partners, board members throughout the state who, and you know, that is the backbone of our community foundation and how we're able to enrich the quality of life throughout Idaho.
I think a lot of our listeners, those who you identified as a subset earlier who are already engaged, will understand what a community foundation is. But we hear about foundations oftentimes when we hear about underwriters for public television or radio. And a lot of times those foundations are targeted towards a specific charitable cause. Give us a little bit more about the difference between that kind of foundation and a community foundation.
Kara, I'm going to let you go to this one because I really feel like you have a better background of the diversity of different foundations. So I think you can speak a little bit more to this point that Phil's asking.
Yeah, absolutely. So a community foundation is a really interesting and unique organization, definitely different from a private foundation, a corporate foundation, or a family foundation. Typically, those types of foundations all of their funding from a singular source, whether that be, you know, one philanthropic family or a company looking to give back to communities. But what makes the Idaho Community Foundation so interesting, to me at least, and again unique, is that the funds that we have come from a variety of donors across the state who are all interested in different things. We have, I want to say, gosh, at this point, over 650 funds that are held within the Community Foundation. And it's really cool for donors because they get the flexibility to do their charitable giving and make their philanthropic impact in the way that they want to. So I guess a couple of examples, like they could choose to designate all of their gifts to go to one or two specific nonprofits, or through, if they were to set up what we call a Forever Idaho Fund, then those funds would be pooled in a collective giving model where they're partnered together with a lot of other donors' funds, and then local regional councils actually make those grant-making decisions through a competitive grant round. So the variety for people who want to get involved with the community foundation and with charity is huge. I mean, you can even just support the work that we do through a membership.
Yeah. And so why would a, just a general question, why would a person with funds to donate, charitable funds, why would they choose a foundation versus just selecting from charities, charitable causes that they know about?
I think the benefit of choosing a community foundation is, again, I'm going to go back to the strong network of donors that we have throughout the state and nonprofit partners, professional advisors. You know, there's something to be said for combining and the synergy that happens when we work together in a partnership. And we're able to really, through those networks, identify, understand, and know who's making an impact in that area so that we can drive that donor to the place where they are going to maximize their giving.
So you do some of the research for them. You help them find the best places for them to make their charitable donations.
I definitely
are matchmakers.
Yep. I was just going to say, Christy, we consider ourselves to be actually charitable matchmakers. We have this huge and really deep network of relationships within the nonprofits across the state that are doing work around specific issues. You know, a lot of folks are like, I care about this specific issue, whatever it may be, but I don't know who's doing the best work and, you know, who's making the difference that I want to make. So, hey, Christy and Kara, will you help me figure out how to give in the most effective way?
And so what are some, can you go more into some of the options that people would have that way?
We have donor advised funds, which are very common. And that is where a donor will establish a fund and annually they will make requests for distributions to different organizations or causes. And that can be done at a community level, county level, statewide level. So there's that option. There's a field of interest fund, as Kara mentioned, where if there's a certain cause that they want to support, but they want it to be brought to different agencies that are handling and providing resources, there are donor-directed funds, designated funds, as Kara mentioned, which name specific organizations. We have agency funds, or what we refer to, as organizational funds. And that's where an organization can establish an endowed fund to support their cause into perpetuity.
Yeah, lots of nice choices. I've got to back up for a moment because unless you've got something, Phil, but we haven't exactly heard from Kara yet about her background.
A lot. I think someone threw out the figure 650 a lot. So
yes,
a lot of
yes.
Options. So yes, Kara, tell us more about your background and how you came to do this work.
Absolutely. And as you can tell, Christy and I love to talk about the Idaho Community Foundation and the work that we do. So we kind of can't help ourselves once we get on a roll. But, you know, I consider myself to be really, really lucky. I have spent my whole career, more than 25 years now, working in the world of philanthropy. And when I say that, I mean across the board, right? I've sat in every chair. I have been on the fundraising side. So from tiny, you know, just, you know, a couple of staff people working on a tiny nonprofit to actually raising money for a state agency, the State Historical Society. And then I also have done some corporate grant making in my time, as well as university fundraising. And that has been the most amazing path that led me to be lucky enough to work for the Idaho Community Foundation, because it totally combines all of my passions, right? Which is working with donors to help them figure out, you know, the impact that they want to make in the state that I love so much, and in all 44 counties too.
So we understand, the Idaho Community Foundation was established 34 years ago, strong presence in North Idaho. Did it start up in North Idaho, or did it start somewhere like Boise and move gradually north? Tell us a little bit about the evolution of it.
So, Kara, go ahead. John Ferry, who was the longtime CEO for Boise Cascade, he knew that something needed to be done. And so he took the initiative to gather a bunch of folks around the state who he knew would be driving forces in establishing the community foundation. And he really just hit the road and traveled throughout the state. And he gathered generous donations from some of our founding donors, such as Potlatch. I can't even name them all, Simplots. We could go on, Karen, I could sit here and talk forever about that. But what he did was he found people who he knew had an interest in promoting the, you know, and enriching the quality of life throughout Idaho. And so although the idea of it started in Boise, we are a statewide foundation, and throughout the years have been able to, through grants ourselves, through the Murdoch Trust, that we were able to secure grants about, I think, 8 or 9 years ago that gave us the ability to hire regional staff to support our work throughout the state.
Yeah, and I'll just add on, it's really fascinating that from the moment of our inception, this idea and this concept and the recognition of the importance of being truly statewide was in the thoughts of our founders, so much so that it's written into our bylaws that there has to be equal representation on our board of directors from around the state.
Well, I think you've given us a wonderful idea of what your foundation, what the Idaho Community Foundation does throughout Idaho. It's so interesting, and I hope that listeners that have the wherewithal to be able to allocate funds are interested and will get in touch with you. It's really a nice description you've given us. We do have an interesting one interesting thing that we want to focus on for the second part of the interview, and I'm going to just launch us into that. And that is the Pacific Northwest Resilient Landscapes Initiative. So let's spend some time talking about it.
Yeah, and great job. I will say that it is a mouthful. But
yes, it is.
Let me see if I can give it to you just sort of in some broad strokes about and why we think it's important too. But so at the Idaho Community Foundation, we know that our lands and our waters are essential to life in Idaho and in the Pacific Northwest. So we also know that climate change is affecting the long-term ability of our lands and waters to sustain plants, fish, wildlife, and local communities. So this initiative was launched with some seed funding from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. And it's a really cool partnership between the Idaho Community Foundation, the Oregon Community Foundation, the Seattle Foundation, and the Land Trust Alliance. And it's also, so those are the foundations that are working together, but it's also, I would say, in partnership with all local land trusts and then like-minded donors. And so really what this initiative is doing is it's supporting those local land trusts and the communities that they serve to really, I think, preserve climate-resilient habitats and help give communities access to clean water, reduce flood risk, maintain working lands, and, you know, preserve our outdoor spaces for solace and recreation. And what makes this initiative extra unique is that it's based upon climate science, which really helps hone in and identify which places are important to preserve that will accomplish all of those goals. So through the initiative, we've identified 21 critical land trust projects that sort of form, we call it this mosaic across Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. And so our goal is to help conserve all of these lands, which equal nearly 30,000 acres, and, you know, really make these investments in the local land trusts at the same time. So we've secured nearly $5 million towards this vision, but we still need to raise $2.3 million to ensure that all 30,000 of those acres can be preserved.
All right. And how is that going to happen? There's some matching dollars. You're going to tell us about that?
Yeah, so we have a really, really cool opportunity to share with listeners today, which is thanks to the Hollis Foundation, we have an opportunity to meet that fundraising goal. So for every $2 given, the Hollis Foundation will give a dollar up to $500,000. But that's only if our initiative partners can raise $1 million by November 30th. So basically, every gift that you would give to this initiative between now and November 30th would be increased an additional 50%.
It's a race. Like a very ambitious and laudable goal. And it's great to have these big visions. And looking at the numbers you just ran through, it sounds like there's also a nice collection of smaller individual landscapes, 21 parcels through 30,000 acres, about roughly 1,500 acres each. Are there some gems in our area that you're able to tell us about that people might connect with?
Yeah, I think probably one of the most interesting ones is the work being done by the Vital Ground Foundation. And why that to me is so interesting is it's not just actually preserving land, but it's really focused on, you know, natural bare habitat. And it's sort of, I think it for me, what it does is it proves the importance of this initiative, right? Because the grizzly and the bear habitat that they're working to preserve is in a band that spans across Montana, Idaho, and into Washington. And so, I mean, it goes to show, right? Our state boundaries are just, you know, these, you know, man-made constructed boundaries. But that's why working in this, you know, tri-state region is so important for this initiative, because it recognizes that, you know, land, habitat, and climate, you know, is impacted, you know, across a region rather than just a state or a locale.
That's right. And I looked at the map before the interview, and they are at various points in within these states. They're not connected exactly, but they were selected for another reason, maybe. We always talk about habitat connection, but there must be a reason for these 21 locales.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, and I'm no climate scientist, I should have said that right up front, but, you know, a lot of it is centered, you know, with the grizzly example, right? You can picture a grizzly bear like lumbering across a parcel of land. But in some of those other smaller parcels of land, particularly that maybe look like they're more isolated from the others, it could be preserving a certain plant that only thrives at a specific elevation, but it serves as a basis for the entire ecosystem of the surrounding elevations.
I know too that some of the work Vital Ground does is to find those keystone connections between larger chunks of public land. So a smaller parcel of 10, 20, 80, 100 acres might be the linchpin between two big roadless tracks that provide for grizzly bear connectivity and movement.
Yeah. Yes, and other animals too, right? Like elk, there are a lot of species that need to get from place to place.
Some of these land trusts serve as, you know, breeding grounds for different species, just like the wild salmon. You know, certain areas in Idaho are protected through land trust to make sure that these salmon are able to make that, you know, that spawning journey. And also, you know, just plants, like Kara said, you know, there are certain habitats that if we did not preserve them in these areas, they would not be able to regenerate throughout our region. So although the land trusts are, you know, we're focused on these land trusts, it really affects the entire ecosystem throughout our region.
So tell us about the timeline. You've got some seed money now from the foundations. Review the goals and timelines. You got some seed money, hoping to raise more that will generate a match. And what are we looking at in terms of how soon all this needs to happen?
I think the key date for folks to know about is November 30th is our deadline to raise the funds if we want to complete these ambitious goals. But the match is an amazing way if you are planning to make a donation and you're intrigued and want to support this work. I mean, it's an amazing way to maximize your own contribution because, again, it'll be matched up to 50% by the Hollis Foundation.
Yeah, that makes sense. If this goal is met, will there be additional fundraising for more land or is this a one-time opportunity?
Well, that's a great question. I think we'd probably have to check in with our friends at the Doris Duke Charitable Trust to see how they were feeling. But, you know, being able to raise over $7 million towards this, you know, beautiful three-state vision, I think makes a huge difference. So TBD on that. But if we're able to meet our goal, we'll definitely let you all know so that you can celebrate with us.
Success always breeds some more success.
I think it's important to note too that even when the deadline passes, you know, a big land trust that we haven't talked about yet that's right there in your backyard is the Kinnexu Land Trust. And through our regional grant program, we have made grants to the Kinnexu Land Trust. So if our deadline passes and there's still a desire for donors to give and support land trusts, we're able to do that. And it's and we can do it through establishing funds as well. There's just so many different ways through the flexibility that we offer that we can continue to support our land trusts even when this match is done and over with.
Yeah, good point.
Really good.
Kara.
Well, I would like to hear a little bit more. You mentioned, I think, one of the marquee programs that you have, the Forever Idaho Fund. And for some of our listeners, they'll be familiar with it, and others, that might be a first introduction. So if you have some time, could you go a little bit more into how that works?
Go ahead, Christy.
So our regional grant program is broken into four regions. We just entered into the fourth region by kind of mapping out the South Central area. And each region has a grant cycle their own. Our grant cycle in North Idaho ends on February 15th of every year. That is the deadline for submitting your grant requests. And then in the spring, usually April, May time frame, our regional council members who are comprised of stakeholders, board members, and just various community members who are our eyes and ears on the ground. They will review those applications and then they make those decisions. Recently, we made some big changes to our regional grant program, including the removal of our $5,000 cap. Now our grants awards are up to $25,000. And we also have changed the basis of our granting, and I'll let Kara go a little bit further into that. But essentially what our regional grant program does is provides grants in each of those regions annually. And this year our grant awards totaled, I think it was over $240,000 in North Idaho, Kara, is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
I'll let you talk a little bit more about our grant program and some of the changes we made.
Yeah. We have definitely, I would say, overhauled our entire grant-making philosophy. And this is based not only with our work managing the statewide COVID-19 Response and Recovery Fund, but also, you know, kind of tracking on some national trends around philanthropy. And there's a whole concept of this idea of trust-based philanthropy. But so we started on having conversations around trust-based philanthropy, and really that's rooted in, you know what, nonprofit organization working on an issue in your community, you are the best equipped to design solutions to the challenges that your community faces. And we as a funder trust you to use funding to make those happen. So it's centered around this idea of relationships and trust. And so then, you know, COVID happened, and we, along with our partners at the United Way and also the Idaho Nonprofit Center, really started up this COVID-19 Response and Recovery Fund. Funders from and individuals also from just across the state and even the region, you know, collectively donated over $2 million within the first 3 months of the pandemic. We were able to turn around and disperse 1.9 million of that back into communities immediately. And I mean, the feedback. So here's what we knew we had to do when we designed that grant making program, right? We knew that nonprofits were already stretched to their limit and strained. So it had to be a super simple application. It had to be no strings attached, unrestricted funding. And you know, it had to be addressing, I think, the most urgent need in the community. So, you know, this sort of flipped all of our traditional grant making on its head. And the response that we heard from nonprofits across the state was remarkable. It was things like, we could not have kept our doors open and helped 10,000 people without you making these changes to your grant making. We couldn't have done the things we've did and saved the people, fed the people, housed the people without this. And so we thought to ourselves, you know what? If that works so well for our COVID fund, we need to actually look to shift all of our grant making to really provide that stability and support to nonprofits. So that's why we made a lot of the changes Christy referenced. You know, it's unrestricted general operating grants, not project-based grants. The limit is now up to $25,000 that you can, you know, we can give to you. And it's based around, you know, we really want to fund those organizations that are making a difference in their community. And we trust them to spend the money on the things that they need to do to fulfill their mission.
So yeah, it's a program you intend to continue on in the future then after this year, again, assuming that the success continues on.
Oh, yep. So absolutely. So the Forever Idaho program has been our annual regional grant making program since we started as a community foundation. So that is all, you know, it'll continue on forever. But it's sort of this shift in philosophy from, you know, these tiny, tiny little project specific grants to this really making an investment in a nonprofit.
Yeah, and that's so interesting to me. And I'm just wondering how you measure success with your change. Is there a, do you have a mechanism for seeing how you're doing?
That's a fantastic question, you know, and one that is on a lot of grant makers' minds, right? It's all about outcomes, KPIs, you know, how do we measure? What's the metrics? And again, it's kind of, it requires a shift in your brain and in your thinking, because what we're saying is success is the trust-based relationship that we have with the nonprofit organization. So in our follow-ups with our funded partners, in the application, one of the questions is, how do you define success? And then therefore a nonprofit is able to set their own measurement and their own barometer for success. And we just ask them to share that with us. Like, how well do you think you did?
Another thing to fall back on is our regional councils. Again, like I said, they are our eyes and ears on the ground. And these folks really have a strong sense of what's going on in their nonprofit communities and areas that they live in. So, you know, we rely heavily on them and they're just wonderful people. They really take their time, they do their due diligence, and they know where they're funding and where they're making these recommendations for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you've developed a trusting relationship from the get-go with known resource folks that have resources in the communities.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Well, I have a question, and that is, what are the best ways for our listeners to learn more about your foundation and participate if they were interested?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll jump in first. And the best place to go is our website, which is idahocf.org. Idaho, cat as in, C as in cat, F as in Frank.org. They can also reach out to me. I, again, visit Sandpoint often, and I'm happy to schedule an in-person or virtual meeting. They can reach me at my email address, christy@idahocf.org. And you know, we're everywhere. They just reach out, a phone call, a quick email, and we are happy to respond and schedule something with them.
Yeah, sounds easy. Well, what are we missing? What else do we need to hear about from you two?
Well, Christy mentioned a phone call, so I suppose our phone number would probably be helpful. So you can reach us at 208-342-3535. But I would just say that the last thing we're missing is we would love, love, love to help any of your listeners, you know, think about their charitable goals and think about philanthropy. So please reach out to us. Don't hesitate. You can tell we love to talk about this stuff. It is our passion. So,
and I have a strong network of professional advisors in the Sandpoint area. So I keep in touch with them regularly. They handle their clients' legal needs, their financial needs, their accounting needs. So these are also folks that if you don't know how to handle it and you have a good relationship with your professional advisor, put them in touch with me also, and I'm happy to meet with them as well. Sometimes it's really overwhelming to determine where to give your money, and it takes a lot of the right people being at the table. So we're happy to introduce you to those people if that's needed as well.
And all those conversations help each other. They help people figure out what to do and helps to clarify goals and intent just to speak to them sometimes. Well, it's certainly been a very educational 35 minutes or so, Julie. I think it's been wonderful to have this conversation to make sure our listeners are aware of some of the great initiatives that are coming down the pike and the great work that Idaho Community Foundation's done. And, if you just tuned in and would like to listen to the whole show, it will be available eventually as a podcast, usually within the next 24 hours after airplay. We've been speaking with Kara Nielsen, Vice President of Philanthropy and Impact from Idaho Community Foundation, and Christy Scott, the philanthropic advisor for North Idaho.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you both, guys. And you know what? I'm going to start thinking about not bequeathing all of my money to my dog, Dexter. So it's been a great learning experience for me.
We can establish a fund in Dexter's name.
The Dexter Fund.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm happy to do it.
Very good.
Thank you so much. This has been a blast. So I think anytime you all want to talk about having to do with charitable giving, we're your girls.
We're your girls. Absolutely. Karen and I can get on a soapbox for days.
We'll have to have you back in November once the date's approaching.
Sounds good.